This morning, I've called this morning, now go and do likewise. And we're going to be looking at story of the Good Samaritan, and I'm going to be looking at some different stories in the Gospels of times when Jesus stopped and helped people. So we'll get to that in a moment. But I want to just tell you a quick story about when we went on holiday once. So I was probably a teenager. And we were in a caravan, and there was a lot of us. So I'm from a family, there was four of us, brothers and sisters, and then my mum got remarried, and there was three of his children. So there were seven of us, seven children, two adults, in a caravan. So you can imagine, like, the walls are really thin, and they were all sharing rooms. It was a big caravan, but it was still a little cosy, shall we say. And one day we were sat around this little breakfast table, eating our breakfast, and my mum and stepdad started to have a little bit of an argument. Sorry, mum, if you listen to this on the podcast, I'm just going to tell all your secrets. So they started to have this bit of an argument, and of course, as respectful teenagers, we all thought we'll leave the room and let them get on with it. Did we heckers like we sat and watched? And so they were having this argument and having a bit of a fight. I can't even remember what the argument was about. But this is what I remember. For breakfast that morning, my stepdad Dave, who some of you know actually, he had eaten Marmite for breakfast and he had Marmite on his face. And so as this argument progressed, my mum was obviously running out of things to say and it was getting more and more heated. And so she turned around and went, "Well, you've got Marmite on your face." And that is where the argument ended, because we all just fell about laughing, all of us watching and everything, and mum and my stepdad Dave, we all just fell about laughing, and that was the end of the argument. But I was thinking about that. Sometimes when you have a bit of an argument with somebody, when you want to make your point, or when you're in a debate, if anybody like did debating at school, anybody did that kind of thing where you're on one team, and yeah, you really think about what you're going to say, don't you? And you really want to try and think about your point, get your point across well, and all that kind of stuff. And there's a story in the Bible of the Good Samaritan. I've been thinking about it a lot recently and listening to some preachers on it and stuff like that. And the thing that's caught my eye again about the story of the Good Samaritan is not necessarily the story itself. Now, most of you know the story. I'll just recap you quickly if you don't know. There's a guy who's walking along and he gets beat up and left at the side of the road. This is like a story that Jesus told. And it gets left at the side of the road. Somebody walks past who you would have thought would help him, a priest, but he doesn't help him. He leaves him there. Then somebody else walks past and leaves him. Then the third person, the Samaritan, the person least likely to help, because Jews and Samaritans didn't get on, came and helped him, took him to an inn, nursed him back to health. So that's the story. But what's really caught my eye is the context of this story. Because if we read in Luke 10 about this story, Ignore the reference on there because that's wrong. I just realised that just before I got up and I was like, oh no, where is it? Lost it. It's actually in Luke 10. And the story of the Good Samaritan. So it says this: on one occasion, an expert of the law stood up to test Jesus. So basically, this guy was a lawyer. So we know lawyers like to argue, don't we? We know lawyers. I don't know if you know any lawyers, but they like to kind of know the law really well. And particularly in their day, they loved sitting around and talking about the law and the Bible and the scriptures and finding little loopholes, finding interpretations of what they thought it meant. So this guy's motive as he gets up before Jesus tells his story is it says that he wants to test Jesus. So he's set out, and I imagine him before the occasion. Jesus is known as a very good teacher. People are amazed by his authority as he teaches. So I imagine this guy is not just asking an off-the-cuff question. He's thought about this. He's sat and he's probably thought, what question am I going to ask Jesus? And what am I going to do if he answers this way? What am I going to say to him if he answers this way? How am I going to win this argument with Jesus? How am I going to test him and catch him out? That was his motivation. And so that's where it comes to test Jesus. And he says, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" And he's thinking, hopefully Jesus will trip up somewhere here. And then Jesus does something quite amazing. If you've ever read the scriptures and just watch how Jesus answers people, he's so clever. He would win any argument. And so how he does it is he answers with a question and he gets him to answer his own question. So he goes, "What's written in the law? How do you read it?" That's what he says. So what do you think? So basically, that's a basic question. You already know the answer to that. You tell me. So then this guy would be arguing with his own question if he answered. So it's really clever. So he replies, how do you read it? And so he answers. So he has to answer. He's in front of everybody. He's on the spot. He says, okay, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbour as yourself. So then who's on the front foot now? Jesus says, you've answered correctly. So now he's kind of like, yeah, maybe a bit patronising. Well done. You got that one right. Very good. And so this guy, now it switches a bit because it says, but he wanted to justify himself. That's the next. And I love that. I love that, that a different version says, seeking to justify himself, he asked, who is my neighbour? So now he's defending himself. He's the other side of the argument. And basically what he's trying to do is find a loophole. Because he wants to say he's good enough to inherit eternal life. He wants to say, yeah, hang on, I've done everything right. I know the law. I'm good enough. And so there he is. He says, okay, love your neighbour as yourself. And he thinks, I don't know if I've always done that. I need a loophole. So he goes, okay, who is my neighbour? So maybe that person who I didn't treat very well, they're not my neighbour, so that's okay. That's what he's basically saying. That's what he's trying to do. So Jesus, in typical fashion, answers with the story. And he tells the story of the Good Samaritan. And he gets to the end of the story, and then he says, I'll read it out so I get it right. So he says, which of these three, meaning the three that the two that didn't help and the one was a neighbour to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? So this guy's pretty trapped now, isn't he? He's going to look stupid if he answers wrong. So he says, the one who has mercy on him. And then Jesus says these words to him, now go and do likewise. Can you see how Jesus has flipped the whole argument around here? So this guy, coming to justify himself, coming to try and trap Jesus, has ended up with a story where he's gone, okay, do I have to love this person? Who is my neighbour? And Jesus basically says, you be the neighbour. You be the good person. You be the good Samaritan. And this guy probably hung his head thinking, I thought of everything that Jesus might say and I didn't anticipate that. And here I am, I've lost the argument, but he's gone away with a very good life lesson, hasn't he, that we still read today and we still think about today. Yeah. And so I've called today's sermon, Go and Do Likewise, because I want to have a look at what Jesus did. Because Jesus didn't just tell a story and say, this is a good story to think about, why don't you go and do it? He actually modelled this story. So not only did he teach, but he lived it. So we don't just have sort of a list of Jesus' teachings, but as we look through the Gospels, we see how Jesus was the Good Samaritan, how he stopped and helped people at the side of the road, and how he took time out for people when they needed it. And so I want to look at some stories of where Jesus stopped and helped people, and look at three people he helped today, or four people, but 3 points today of what Jesus did that really helped people. So we're just going to turn on to Luke 18 and verse 40. I'm just going to grab everybody. Good, I've got a husband. I've nicked his Bible and I'm nicking his drink. So all right. So I'll just give you a minute just to turn to Luke 18. We've got the reference right there. So there you go. Okay, so the blind beggar. Right, I'm going to ask you a question now. And this is, I need you to be honest, okay? Because otherwise I'm going to look terrible because I'm going to be honest. Okay, have you, just lie if you want, just lie to make me feel better. Have you ever been walking around town?
Yes.
Yes. Thanks, Math. Got the heckler at the front. Have you ever been walking around town, right, and you're busy and you've got stuff to do, and you see somebody that you know far enough away that you can pretend you didn't see them, right? And because you're busy and you haven't really got time to say hello, you pretend you haven't seen them. Right, anybody else except me done that before? Oh, thank goodness. Whew. Okay, so it's not just me then. So sometimes in life, we get really busy, don't we? And we think what we've got to do is so important that we don't have time to stop and see someone. And if they've caught your eye, right, that's too late. You can't do that. And that's just rude. Okay, but if they haven't seen you yet, you can perhaps pretend you haven't seen them and get on with your day. Because especially if it's somebody who talks a lot, right? Some people, it's just a quick conversation. Some people, you know, you're going to be there a good 10 minutes and you think, I haven't got 10 minutes to spare. I'll just pretend I haven't seen them. But you know, I'm amazed at Jesus, because Jesus was like, he was so busy. He had so much to do and everything he did was so important. So he was there preaching in front of crowds of people and he had all his followers and he came for this important mission in life. And then, yeah, he found the time to stop for the one or two people that probably nobody else would stop for. And if we're honest, sometimes the person that we don't stop for because we don't really feel we have the time for them, or we might find them a bit annoying or whatever it is. But yet Jesus found time to stop for those people. And they're some of the people I want to look at. this morning. So the first one is a blind beggar found in Luke 18. And I went around. I'll just give you an example. I was in town one time, and I saw this guy who, I don't really know him very well, but he always stops, and he's this old guy, and he's really friendly, but he does talk quite a bit. And I remember seeing him, and I was with my sister, and I was like, oh, pretend you aren't seeing him, carry on walking. And she stopped. I was thinking, what are you doing? And she started talking to him, and she was really friendly, and we were stood there like 15 minutes. But you know, as we stood there talking, and I said to her, oh, that was nice of you to say hello. She went, yeah, do you know, I think he's really lonely, and he wants someone to talk to. And I felt awful, like out of that, you know, I'm the churchgoer. I'm like the one who stands up and preaches, and I didn't have time. And she just stopped and just said, yeah, actually, I think he's a bit lonely and he wants someone to talk to. Yeah. And so that really challenged me. In this chapter, there's loads of stories, and we're going to pick the blind beggar. But if you look above it, the kind of theme of the passage is kind of Jesus helping the lonely and Jesus telling stories about people perhaps other people wouldn't have time of. So there's the parable of the persistent widow, which is all about a little widow who goes and keeps talking to a judge till she gets justice. And then there's the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, one who thinks they're super important and says a prayer, thank you, I'm so good. And the tax collector who pleads for mercy, and Jesus says, who got what they wanted off God? It was the tax collector. And then there's a story of the little children being brought to Jesus. And Jesus, the disciples kind of say, oh, send them away. Don't bother Jesus with them. And Jesus goes, no, bring the children to me. I care about the children. Yeah. And so then we come. Oh, and then there's the rich in the kingdom of God, how Jesus says that it's hard for the rich to come into the kingdom of God. And then we get to this story about a blind beggar. So you can kind of see this theme that Luke's kind of weaving just about Jesus stopping for those who other people wouldn't have stopped for. And so Jesus in that passage lets the rich man who comes and talks to him, he lets him go. The rich man never gets salvation. And then he stops for this beggar on the side of the street. And if we read the story, we can see that the crowd weren't best pleased about this. So it says, as Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting on the roadside begging. When he heard the crowd going by, he asked what was happening. And they told him, Jesus of Nazareth is passing by. I want you to imagine what life is like for this guy. A lot of people would sit on the city gates, the city gates were where a lot of stuff happened. And they would sit there and beggars and things like that would ask for money, and they would sit. And this guy is blind, but he probably has a sense of what's going on around him. They say sometimes your other senses are heightened, don't they, when you lose a sense. And he was probably there and he heard a lot of hustle and bustle and he realised something was going on. So he just yells out to anyone who's listening because he can't see and goes, hey, what's happening? And someone says, oh, Jesus of Nazareth is coming. And he thinks, this is my chance. If I yell loud enough, this guy might hear me and he might give me what I need. He might give me something that I want. And so it says in the next bit, he called out, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. And look at the crowd's reaction. This is what we do sometimes, isn't it? Those who led the way rebuked him and told him to be quiet. And then I love this bit, but he shouted all the more, son of David, have mercy on me. And so he's there and the crowds are kind of telling him to be quiet. And there he says, son of David, have mercy on me. That's one of the first times that Jesus is called that. It's only called that a couple of times in the Bible. The other one is when he makes his triumphal entry. And it's actually a real statement of faith that this beggar's making, because he's saying, I believe you're the Messiah and I believe you can help me. And everyone else is trying to shut him up because they're a bit embarrassed by him, because he's making a bit of a fool of himself, to be honest. He's yelling out and Jesus, don't have time for you. You're a beggar on the street. Just be quiet. And but then the next two words is two words. I just want you to remember. This is what I've called my point. It says Jesus stopped. I don't think that's just profound, isn't it? Jesus stopped. He was with crowds of people. He was probably going somewhere. He probably had 101 things to do, but he stopped. And he listened to this beggar and he gave this beggar a few minutes. And he ordered the man to be brought to him. He says, when he came near, Jesus asked him, what do you want me to do for you? And then, Lord, I want you to see. I want to see, he replied. Jesus said to him, receive your sight, your faith has healed you. Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus. This guy, he cried out to Jesus. It says in the Bible that the Greek is bioa. I think I said that right. And it's to use one's voice at high volume to shout and call out. And it says that he continued to shout out. If you look at the word shouting, he wasn't going to give up until he got what he wanted from God. And I love how Jesus stopped for him. And it says Jesus stopped there. And he looked at his faith. And then if we look at Jesus' humility as well, when Jesus does a miracle in the Bible, he always points it back to the Father. He always says where he gets his power from. He always says, I'm doing the will of the Father. You see that a lot, don't you? I'm doing the will of the Father. And praise God, the Father, not me. He always points it back. Now, if that had been me, I'd be like, yeah, look at me. I can heal the blind. Check me out. Like, I don't know about you. Maybe I'd hide it a bit better than that, but that's kind of what I'd be thinking. And there Jesus is. He first of all gives credit to God. And secondly, he has the humility to say to this guy, your faith has healed you. He kind of gives the guy his own credit. But it's your faith. You're healed by your faith. Well done, mate. Yeah, how humble is Jesus that he comes and makes this guy feel good about himself, that he's had faith to believe in Jesus and he's spurring on that faith. Say, go on, keep going with your faith. Keep living this life. That's why you've got healed and you've got your sight. And it just kind of blows me away that Jesus stops for this guy at the edge of the road who no one else was bothered about. Everyone else told to shut up and keep quiet. And he stopped and he healed him. So my first point this morning that I want to kind of make out off the Good Samaritan, that Jesus kind of modelled that, was that he stopped for someone. And I want to challenge us that when we're maybe out and about, maybe when we feel like we've got too much to do, sometimes people come at the most inconvenient times, don't they, when we don't want them. And God might just drop something into your heart. Just go say hello to that person. Maybe if you're dropping your kids off at school, we talked about this in Family Care, just walk across the playground and talk to that mum and dad. Maybe if you're shopping in town and you see someone who's lonely and wants to say hello, just say hello to them. Just spend that few minutes, because you never know what might come out of that. You never know what fruit, when we listen to God, when we choose to just stop and do as God is asking us to do. I just want to finish this point with a quote. It was a quote that I've used before, but I come back to it every now and again because I found it. My grandpa was a preacher, and when he died, I got his Bible, and it's a little quote in there. It's not, I thought he had written it when I first read it, but apparently it's quite a famous quote. And it says this: teach us, good Lord, to serve you as you deserve, to give and not to count the cost, to fight and not to heed the wounds, to toil and not to seek for rest, to labour and not to ask for any reward save that of knowing that we do your will. And I just think that just kind of embodies this lovely attitude, that if we can walk around with that kind of attitude, actually not living for ourselves, but stopping once in a while for other people, then it's going to be amazing what God can do through that. Right, the second thing is that Jesus overcame social barriers. So we're going to look at two people in this point. We're going to look at Zacchaeus and we're going to look at the woman in the well. So the reference should come up. It's a little bit small, isn't it? Is it bigger? Oh, it's a bit dark. Sorry. That's Zacchaeus and the woman at the well, if you can't read that. It's me doing my fancy colours and it's all... I can't actually read it. Okay, so the reason I've picked these two is because they were both kind of social outcasts at the opposite ends of the scale. So we're going to have a little look at them both. Zacchaeus, this is just the next bit as well of the chapter, straight after. So Luke's kind of carrying on with this theme of Jesus stopping probably for people who other people wouldn't stop for. I'm not going to read the whole thing because we probably won't have time to cover them. You can read it yourself if you like when you go back. But I'm sure you know the story. Jesus is coming past. If you've been to Sunday school, it's probably done quite a lot in Sunday school. Jesus is coming and this guy Zacchaeus, he's a crook, he's a thief, he steals off people. But he wants to see Jesus. There's something in his heart that was hungry to see who this Jesus guy was. And he was very short. It's good that I'm talking about him because Math likes to make jokes. I say I'm wearing my heels, so maybe this would be the right height otherwise. But there he is. He goes and he hides up a tree to watch out for Jesus, and Jesus points him out. And again, we see the similarities in this. It says in Luke 19, verse 7, all the people who saw this began to mutter, he's gone to be the guest of a sinner. So Jesus says, I'm coming to your house, and the crowd don't like it. Why is he hanging around with these people? Don't he get it? Like Jesus, he could be like the guest of honour any place, and he picks Zacchaeus, who everyone hates. Now, I don't know what his reputation was in the day. It seems like people didn't like him. I'd probably compare it to people. He was kind of stealing taxes. So like all tax evasion stuff's been in the news at the moment, isn't it? Don't people just hate big companies when they do like tax avoidance, yeah? People are like, hang on a minute, they've got loads of money and they don't pay their fair share, and they should, rightly so. And people get very cross about it. I wonder how much more people would be cross at Zacchaeus, because not only was he not paying his fair share, he was taking it off poor people. He was like the opposite of Robin Hood, right? He would go and he would rob from the poor and give to the rich himself and put it in his pocket. And he probably had a very big house, swanky businessman, had all the stuff that he wanted. They didn't have cars in them days, but he probably had the best donkey or whatever. And riding around on that. And people will look and go, yeah, he's made that money off that poor old widow over there because he's taken all of her coins when he shouldn't have. And people really didn't like him. And you can understand why, can't you? You can get why. So can you imagine the crowd's reaction when Jesus, out of anybody, picked Zacchaeus to go to his house? But there was something in Zacchaeus. There was some hunger in Zacchaeus that he wanted to change his ways. And he wanted to find out who Jesus was. And so Jesus picks him out of the tree. And we know by the end of the story that he is radically transformed, turns his life around, gives back all the money. I don't know how he does it because he gives back four times what is stolen. So he must have been like really rich off other ways as well, because I'm not quite sure how that works. But he ends up giving to charity and giving to poor people, and his life is turned around. And then we look at the woman in the well. She's in John 4. And there's a woman drawing water from the well. She's there at midday. And I've heard that most people would go, it was very hot at midday, most people wouldn't go draw water at midday. And a lot of preachers surmise that that's because she didn't want to see anyone. So it's a bit of a social occasion. We know what women can be like, don't we? Nattering away. And men, yeah, some of the men are not. Sometimes men are bad as well. But we know women get together and they like to have a talk and a bit of a gossip maybe. And that was when they did it. It was like their place to go when they were drawing the water. She did not do that. She went at midday, so she didn't have to see anyone. It was probably because of her lifestyle. We find out Jesus prophesies over her. He says, yeah, you've got five husbands. And she's like, whoa, how did you know that? Or you've had five husbands. The man you live in and with at the moment isn't your husband. That was really looked down upon. They would have probably just all been sat there gossiping about her on their 11 o'clock gossip or whatever when they were going to get the water. And they were probably just talking about her. She just thought, I'm best to avoid people. That's a bit of preacher's license, but some good preachers agree with that, so we'll go with it. So there she is. And Jesus, of all people, goes and sits next to her. So we've got Zacchaeus at one end, hated because he's rich and taking all people's money. And at the other end, we've got this woman at the well. And as I said already, Jews and Samaritans don't really mix. Women were looked down upon by men. They didn't really mix in that way. So she's there and she's quite astonished. So it says, Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down at the well. It was about noon when a Samaritan woman came to draw water. Jesus said to her, will you give me a drink? His disciples had gone into town to buy food. And then the Samaritan woman says to him, you're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans. Are you getting the picture this morning? Jesus is coming and he's associating with all these people that the religious leaders don't like him doing. And the crowds are even going, what are you doing, Jesus? But yeah, he stopped and he made time. And I love this story about the woman at the well, because all through his ministry, Jesus hides who he is from everybody. He doesn't want to give it away too soon because he'd probably end up dying too early. So he's waiting for instructions from God and people say, oh, who are you? And he kind of hides it at first until he really gets into his ministry. And he's not always direct about who he is. But to this woman, he reveals that he's the Messiah. She's the first person. Can you imagine the privilege, the first person that Jesus reveals he's the Messiah to? Wow. And he picks this woman, this adulterous woman, who is looked down upon by everybody because she's not really keeping the law. And he comes and seeks her out and finds her and says, and he tells her. And he says, yeah, go and tell your friends who I am. You've met the Messiah. And she's like, whoa. Like, can you imagine what she's thinking? Why would he choose me? Why would he come and sit down and come next to me? But, you know, sometimes as Christians, we maybe look at different people and we maybe don't want to associate with them because they're involved in a certain sin or a certain lifestyle. And here, I just think that Jesus gives us permission to love everyone. So it's not like that. It's not like if you go and speak to that person, you're then condoning that sin or something like that. And I read a quote this week which says, don't judge someone just because they sin differently from you. Because that's it, isn't it? We all sin. Yeah. But sometimes we find other people's sin more distasteful because it's a different way they sin to what we sin. Yeah. But Jesus gives us permission to love everyone. It doesn't matter what their lifestyle is. It doesn't matter what they're caught up in. The crowds and everyone was disgruntled by the people that Jesus stopped for, but he came and he overcame those social barriers. I don't know who socially maybe you would look down upon a certain group of people, or maybe your friends would look down upon, but I want to give you permission this morning to break those barriers, to go and talk to the people that no one else will talk to, or to go and overcome. Maybe there's a certain thing that really just you struggle with and you don't want to get involved in, but don't discount the people from that, because God wants to reach everyone of every lifestyle, of every walk of life. And then third and finally, Jesus brought hope. And I want to look at a story of a very unfortunate guy who was filled with some demons. And it's in Mark 5. So we're skipping through the lots of different stories this morning. Just give me a moment to find it. Right, Mark 5. Jesus restores a demon-possessed man. I'm not going to read the whole thing again. It's quite long and we haven't got loads of time. But I'll read you the first part. So it says, when Jesus got out the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been chained, hand and foot. But he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. I wonder what the local village thought of this guy. So, you know, like when you're in Louth, if there's a few, like, what, we're about 16, 17,000, aren't we? Even in, that was probably big compared to some of the towns in their day. But even in a town this size, you kind of get to know the nutters, am I right? Yeah, am I allowed to say that? There's a few people, and perhaps, either they're nuts, perhaps some people who are just a bit different, perhaps some people who, like, there's, no, I won't say that. Yeah. We'll draw the line there, okay? You know what I'm talking about. Yes. So you kind of get to know people, don't you? And you get used to them, and maybe in a friendly way, maybe sometimes in not a friendly way. But I wonder what they thought of this guy, right? So he's there. He's been there a while, it seems, because they said they used to bind him with chains, and then that stopped working. So they just kind of went, we'll just leave him to it. I wonder what they thought of him. I wonder if you invited a guest over and your house was near the graveyard and you like this guy's screaming and shouting and cutting himself, you'd be a bit freaked out. And I wonder if, what's the deal with that guy in the graveyard? I wonder if they just got used to him. Ah, don't worry, it's Freddy. He does that. Just don't go in the graveyard. Don't go too near and you'll be fine. Just stay away from him. He's got issues going on there. But I think, like, from the sounds of it, they'd given up hope on him, hadn't they? They were like, as long as he's over there, he's not our problem. We'll try chaining him up. Didn't work. He's not really leaving the graveyard, so we'll just kind of cordon that area off. I don't know what they did, if there was a burial or a funeral. I have no idea. Maybe there was another graveyard. But I think they probably got used to him. That's what I think. I probably think they got used to him being there and they knew him and they just thought that's him. He's got his issues. Maybe they ridiculed him. Maybe they were afraid of him, some people. But Jesus comes in and the transformation of this man is so radical that the people's reaction, it was quite bizarre. It was fear. The people were scared. So this guy has gone from being an absolute nutter who runs around cutting himself and screaming and whatever he was doing. And it says, when they came to Jesus, they saw the man who'd been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed, so that implies he's probably naked as well, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Isn't that an interesting response? They got so used to this guy that they were actually scared that Jesus had come and made him well. Because they'd seen this awesome power that Jesus had, and he'd come and he'd given hope to somebody that they had lost hope on long ago. And he'd come and transform this guy. Maybe there's people that you know that you think are beyond all hope. Maybe people in your family. Maybe people in your community. Maybe people down your street. And you've ruled them off and you've written them out and you've gone, not for them. They're just too far out there. I want to say nobody is beyond hope. Nobody is beyond the reach of Jesus. He can reach anybody. Maybe you know people who are an avid atheist and they say they hate God and anything to do with church. Normally those people are closer than you think to knowing God when they're angry about it. Maybe there's people you've invited to church before and they've said, nah, not for me, and you've kind of given up on them. Maybe there's people who are just in a lifestyle that you're like, they're just too bad. They're too sinful. They could never find God. Nobody is out of Jesus' reach. If he can heal this guy who was beyond all hope, who everybody had given up on, nobody is beyond hope. And I would just want to encourage us this morning, again, just to maybe spend a few honest minutes before God, just praying and just going, God, is there anybody I've ruled out? Is there anybody I've not stopped for? Is there anybody that because of the social circle they're in, I've discounted? Because you stopped for everybody. You overcame the social barriers. You came and you gave hope to people that everybody else had given up on. And we're kind of at the beginning of mission this week. A lot of you are on the team. There might be some people on mission this week that people, maybe they're off on their own. Maybe they haven't got any friends. Let's not discount anybody this week as we're on mission. maybe this week at work or going about what you're doing, you might just see somebody. Just be open to God again. And sometimes we just need to repent, don't we? I do as well. And just go, I've written that person off, but God, you can actually reach them. Just give me that fresh eyes again to listen to your voice and to be open if anybody needs to hear about you, if anybody needs an encouraging word, if anybody needs just for me to stop and talk to them. So Jesus not only told a story about the Good Samaritan, but he modeled it for us, didn't he? He stopped and he looked at people and he did for them what nobody else would do. And so I just want to finish this morning. I'm going to pray, but I just want to finish with that sentence that we call it, now go and do likewise.